Yes, we are having fun, and we are definitely partying. Just saw Boone Tucker walk by, or Boone Cutler walk by. A lot of people here at CPAC West. Do you believe it? CPAC West. We've always heard of CPAC, and they've been in the East Coast and doing so many great meetings there and bringing in people to speak who are just incredibly knowledgeable on the subjects that they speak on. And I couldn't be happier. You're listening to The Monica Jay Show on 92.3 and 99.1 FM Talk. It's live and local FM Talk, and this is when we bring the big guns in, and we have them tell you what's going on nationally and how it affects you locally. And that's what is important, because we all know it starts here and goes to the ground, or it starts from the ground up. A little tongue-tied because I'm seeing so many people I adore. Getting so many wonderful highs, and you can actually, I'm kind of tongue-tied because they're shopping here. I'm sorry. Bring your wallet. Come on down. It's going until 4 o'clock today with amazing speakers like Matthew Whitaker and Matt Schlapp. And I had to grab this young woman off the stage. She just spoke, and that is Caitlin Owens. She's the policy analyst for the Nolan Center for Justice at ACU. And you'll hear me use that acronym a lot. It's the it is the American Conservative Union. And they are the ones that bring you CPAC. They're the ones who are putting all this together. So you know the people that you can follow, Facebook, Twitter, and the names that you hear in the news quite often. So, Caitlin, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So you were giving a great analysis up on the stage to everybody, and that was about the First Step Act. Explain people what that is.
Yeah, the First Step Act was passed last December and signed into law by President Trump. It got a lot of bipartisan support. This has been a long time coming, but it creates an incentive for, you know, formerly incarcerated individuals to, you know, basically have a second chance. We see, you know, a lot of mandatory minimums, mm-hmm. you know, locking folks up for a long period of time for essentially nonviolent offenses. You know, when we spend $40,000 per year per inmate, I mean, that adds up. And so ensuring that we're really focusing our taxpayer dollars where it matters. So, you know, we want to hold inmates accountable. You know, when they commit a crime, we want to ensure that, you know, they are punished.
But yeah,
we
don't want to be punishment.
Yeah, we don't want to solely punish, though. We want to rehabilitate. We want to, you know, create incentives for them to create a better life for themselves, because 95% of, you know, those incarcerated will return into society at one point in time. Mm-hmm. And so ensuring that, you know, they, when they're going to be our neighbors, you know, when they're going to be our coworkers, making sure that they have the right tools in place to not just recidivate and, you know, live a life of crime.
So will more programs be put in place in the justice system, in the prisons, in the jails, for people who want to rehabilitate, for people who want to learn a skill or something that makes them actually valuable to the citizens?
I think that it goes to your point about, you know, it all starts with the local level and the state level. And so, you know, with President Trump signing the First Step Act, that was on the federal level. That, you know, is a small population. That's about 5% of those incarcerated. So we really need to target the states. And so seeing that, you know, President Trump, you know, he signed a bipartisan law, we want to see that trickle down into the states and local government, because that's where it really makes a difference.
It's a tenuous act, though, because so many people are under the belief that, especially when you have someone that is sentenced to, say, life in prison with the possibility of parole, and they're out in 7 years or 10 years, and people are seeking justice. They feel like they haven't received that justice now because they really didn't get the sentence that they were supposed to get. Does that make the lower level, the locals, look at programs like this and just think, they're getting off easy again?
I'm sure it does for some, but you have to realize that, you know, we have to start somewhere. And so creating, you know, programs and rehabilitation in place, you know, that starts with humanizing, you know, what they did. Yes, we have to recognize and hold them accountable. We absolutely do. But, you know, locking them up and throwing away the key is not beneficial for any of us, because if they are going to, you know, come back into society, they're just going to be angry at the system if they didn't get, right. you know, the treatment or programs or even feel like they were, you know, human beings. They're just going to live a life of crime. And so we really want to make sure that they have education, that they have, you know, jobs in prison where they feel that they have a sense of hope. Mm-hmm. I always say, you know, you should never be remembered for the worst thing that you did. You know, we right. all make mistakes. We all do things that we regret. And I don't want to be held accountable for or, you know, remembered for, you know, the worst thing I did. I want to be given a second chance.
Well, guess what? There's Facebook and Twitter and everything like that now. So people are checking up on you. But I know we talk about drugs for lower level offenses, but did that take into account any of the sex crimes that, you know, you've got juveniles who are being charged with, you know, really bad offenses for sexting, you know, and they're kids and they're getting these things slapped on them that are going to go for them the rest of their lives. Is that being addressed at all?
Yeah. I mean, you know, different states are doing different things, but we're really focused in Pennsylvania. And I actually visited a prison earlier this week, and I spoke to a lot of juvenile lifers. And when you think of that, you know, they are kids, you know.
Yeah.
It's, you know, doctors and health practitioners, they tell us that, you know, your brain isn't fully developed until you're in your 20s.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I did so many bad things when I was a teenager. And so,
yeah, we're not going to bring up my past.
But, you know, you're not who you were at 17 or 18.
Yeah.
And so, you know, hearing about their stories, hearing about how, you know, maybe they won't ever get out, but how they want to be forgiven, that they want to have a sense of, I committed this crime, but I am not my crime. I'm still, you know, John Doe or, you know, whatever. But, you know, it's about second chances, and it's about feeling and recognizing that you still have hope.
Well, we have to, yes, you still have hope, but we also have to keep in mind that we're seeing, I look at the education system as one of our biggest problems. You know, they have the information. They have the files on the kids who have been aggressive, who have been angry, who have made lists of targets and been bullied and things like that, but that doesn't go out of the high school realm. Their records are sealed. You know, how does that protect society with the justice system that we have, that we're not sharing that information, even though they're juveniles?
Right. I mean, with the educational system, you know, we had a 1994 crime bill. It was the tough on crime era. And that really got rid of education in our prison systems. And, you know, with the juveniles, with, you know, the lifers in prison, you know, they're, it's the states who get to decide whether they have educational programs in prison. And if we, you know, re-implemented Pell Grants, which is what we got rid of in 1994, we would see a plethora of good return on our investment if we allowed more education into the system with juveniles and lifers. Because, you know, we think about, you know, prison is hell on earth. You know, it's the worst place you want to be. And if you, you know, speak on, you know, the, if you think about education, you know, we think that is a place to teach and to learn. And so just because you're in prison for life, you know, again, I'm going back to hope, you know, you still want to feel needed and respected. And so education is a perfect, you know, program for that.
And unfortunately, that's my personal opinion, that kids aren't being educated. They're not learning. They're being socialized. They're being taught and, you know, integrated into a system of feeling and all that stuff. And we don't teach thinking. We don't think, we don't teach rational logic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's getting us into a lot of problems and issues now and for the future.
Yeah. I think also it's just who you surround yourself with too.
Yeah.
Your community, it has a lot to do with it.
Yeah. It's not just one thing.
Right.
It's
right. No, it's never just one thing.
It's all of those little things that work together.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
What do you want to see come out of a congress or of a convention like this and speaking to public?
Well, just with, you know, the issue on criminal justice reform that I, you know, take up, I would really want to see just a wave of bipartisan support. We cannot do anything, you know, solely Democrat, solely Republican. We have to work together. Mm-hmm. And with criminal justice, you know, it's an issue where I think that we can find common ground. You know, we look at the statistics and, you know, it doesn't lie, and the numbers don't lie. And so if we think of criminal justice reform not as soft on crime, mm-hmm. but smart on crime, we mm-hmm. turn that approach on its head. And so, again, we do want to punish those who committed a crime, you know, or whatnot, but we don't want to solely do that. You know, it's called Department of Corrections for a reason.
Right.
We want to correct. We want to rehabilitate. We want to, you know, give them treatment, the tools to, you know, turn their life around.
I don't want to, you know, completely associate it with like training a puppy, but, you know, when the puppy does something wrong, yes, they get in trouble, but you have to incentivize them as
exactly.
well. You know, you yep. have to make it worth their while that they're going to get out of there and they're going to go into a good life again.
100%.
So, Caitlin, thank you so much. And for people that want to find out more about the First Step Act or the Nolan Center for Justice, what do they do?
Yeah, you can go to our website. You can either go to the American Conservative Union website. It's called conservative.org. Or you can visit the Nolan Center for Justice website. It is conservativejusticereform.com. And we have loads of information. You know, as I say, you know, you don't know what you don't know until
you don't know it.
Yeah. Well, you have to educate yourself, and yeah. it's all about educating yourself, finding those resources, finding those statistics, and really, you know, once you learn something, you know, pass it along.
Yeah. Caitlin Owens, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank
I really
you for
appreciate
having
it. And welcome to Reno, Nevada.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
All right. We're going to take a quick break here and bring you more as we broadcast live today from CPAC West, the very first one. And we've got some great interviews on the way for you, including, could it be Matthew Whitaker? Recognize that name? The interim AG. We'll be right back with him here on 92.3 and 99.1 FM Talk. It's 99.1 and now 92.3 FM Talk for all of Northern Nevada. It's live and local. It's the Monica J Show, but it's your show because we talk about your issues, local, national, federal, state, it doesn't matter. It's all about you. And I have to bring in the good guests, especially when we have something as extraordinary as CPAC West going on right now. People who actually pay attention to politics might recognize CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee. But, you know, this is very nice. It's the very first one here in the West, here in Reno, and we're proud to be here as part of the Basque Fry, the fifth annual Basque Fry, tomorrow at Corley Ranch. And with me right now is Matt Schlapp. Matt, how do I condense who you are? Because, you know, Fox News commentator, author, what do you just, do you have a billboard of things that we can go down?
You know, I guess I would say I spend most of my time being a husband and a father. Mercy, who's going to be here later on today, and I have five daughters, and she has spent the last 2 years obviously working for President Trump in the White House, which made my life, my role as Mr. Mom expanded for the last 2 years. She's now left the White House and is moving over to the president's reelection campaign, and I do ACU and CPAC as in a part-time basis.
As
a volunteer.
Yeah, right.
It's true. I am a volunteer.
I volunteer on the air here too. So ACU.
I understand that too because I also have a radio show, and it's damn near volunteering.
So ACU, explain how that got started and why was that important for you to do something.
The American Conservative Union was established in 1964. So it's older than I am, and it was established because Barry Goldwater lost that election, got wiped out in 1964, and the conservatives of that time said, hey, William F. Buckley and others said, hey, we got to find a way to work together, so we're going to lose the country, and they did, and, you know, they in short order nominated Ronald Reagan to be president. And he obviously won in 80 and 84. They took over the Republican Party. The Republican Party has been a conservative party since then. So we've done great things. Now, we've been around a long time, and it's easy to get long in the tooth and get a little sleepy. And we're trying to, over the last couple of years, to really shake off all those cobwebs, because the rise of socialism and secularism in our country is alarming.
We have just here in Reno, we have neighborhood advisory boards, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Right.
Well, we now have beyond that collectives, Reno collectives. So, and you may know that we have a very liberal Democrat mayor.
Those sound like communes.
Yeah, they really do.
Yeah.
You know, the people who kind of do the brainwashing. And, you know, Hillary Sheevy, our mayor campaigned for Hillary. I guess Hillary stick together. But we have a very liberal Democrat-controlled area, especially here in Washoe County. But we love Nevada, except for Clark County, because all of our rural areas are red.
Yeah.
And we have a hard time here in Washoe County. But how are we to change that?
You know, it's funny. They always, liberals do such a good job of saying we're at war with women, we're at war with Hispanics. You name it. And what's really
last
funny.
Last time my husband checked, I'm a woman.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
I am total Republican, conservative.
So are the women of my family. But, you know, there's really a war on rural America being waged by the liberals. And you can see it in every way. They're trying to destroy their way of life. They've done a pretty good job of losing jobs in rural America. And you keep thinking about this question about, are we united still? Are we United States of America? Are our divisions getting the best of us? And I think they are. You know, we just came from Hong Kong. We had a CPAC in Japan. We had our third annual CPAC Japan. And the student leaders, protest leaders, asked us to go to Hong Kong. And, you know, you really realize we have these freedoms can be taken away. And it's really important for the citizenry to stand up and be heard.
Well, we're seeing what's happening in China, and they wish they had our freedoms. And
that's right.
What's going on around the world.
But Hong Kong has our freedoms, and they're taking them away.
Yeah.
And the people on the mainland would love to have just a slice of what Hong Kong has. People of Venezuela and Cuba would love to have a slice of what we have. It's a very precious thing, this idea of fundamental human rights and civil rights and democracy.
Is it safe to say that there are other countries in the world who are the world powers that want these freedoms removed from us? Are we the last holdout of people being able to speak their mind, of people being able to do what they want to do as a profession and live a life of, you know, not extreme luxury, but being able to pay their bills and, you know, not rely on the government?
Thing is government is too big and does too much. It takes too much of our money. And the result of all that is we have less economic opportunity. Yeah. People sometimes say economic freedom. They don't know what that means. But what it really means is in your family that you'll have fewer job prospects. You'll make less money. You'll be more of the money that you do make will go to people who don't want to get up and listen to the alarm clock. I mean, I hate to be so cavalier, but no one has a biblical problem with taking care of orphans and widows.
Yeah.
But we're just taking care of everyone who wants to also not work. And they can get their health care, and they can get their pharmaceuticals, and they can get rent, and they can get food. And you have to ask yourself, one middle-class person is working hard, probably two jobs, to keep it all going for their family, because he pays so much taxes, he or she, to pay for the lives of these people who don't seem to want to do that. And I just feel like that's the fundamental problem with socialism in the end. You have these equal, you know, these universal rewards,
right.
And that means nobody feels like I should do extra to make my life even better.
Well, and I feel that that's how they've gotten to us and kind of dug their heels in, because we've turned from a thinking society to a feeling society.
Yeah.
We saw this decades ago starting in the universities, but unfortunately, with not paying attention, it is now all the way through high school and into our elementary schools. I mean, we even have a 13-year-old climate change activists out there now from another country that's, you know, but and we think
I've tweeted at her.
Oh, you've tweeted.
And look, I God bless her. She's got her conscience and she's following it and she's brave, but she literally believes that she didn't have a carbon footprint. She is in a boat, you know, sailing or whatever. I guess sailing, because she couldn't use a motor. But do you know how much carbon went into creating that boat? I bet she has some food on that boat.
Her,
you know how much carbon
team,
went into
her team that had to take the boat back?
Yes.
Flew.
It's insane.
They flew.
And now they're saying they want to decarbonize society. And Bernie Sanders is saying this. Just so everybody knows, and I know your listeners know this, That is impossible. Matter of fact, that's a lie. That is simply a lie. You can't take fossil fuels out of the equation. And you can't take carbon out of the equation. You can't take CO2 out of the equation. Because we're involved with CO2 right now as we're talking to each other.
Yeah. Hello.
Yeah.
How important is Washoe County and Clark County?
Right. Well, look, I'm not from here. And I look at Clark County and I say one of the big problems we have in our big cities is I'm increasingly alarmed with all the flexible ways in which you can vote. It's all this early vote. California, we saw all this.
We have same-day voting now. It was just passed.
Yeah, so same-day registration or whatever. Yep. So you can just pretty much not take any planning involved to vote, and people can collect your absentee ballots and vote for you. Even if it's illegal, there's nobody looking over that process. So these voting reforms that the left have been really clever in putting in is really creating a huge fraudulent vote. And so I think in places like Clark County and all the big counties, we have this in Kansas, in the Kansas City suburbs where I'm from. We've seen it in Virginia with the suburbs around Washington, D.C. Once again, it comes to this question, which is like, here's how like a regular red voter says, I got to find time today to go vote. Yeah. You know, it's like it's our obligation to make it work. And liberals just think differently. They think, well, someone's going to come around and collect my ballot. And so they have such an amazing way to turn out the vote. And that's what happened in Nevada and Clark County, right? They just turned out their vote. Probably they made the difference in the million votes that separated Hillary Clinton from Donald Trump. And I'm great with everyone voting, by the way, even liberals. I want everyone to vote. I don't want it to be mandatory. And I think we should all vote the same way. I really think it's gotten absurd.
Yeah.
And I think it's given rise to a lot of fraud.
Yeah. And that's what we're afraid of. Matt Schlapp, thank you so much for joining
me. Thank you
today.
For being here.
This is my
All right.
home.
Are we going to do this next year? Is this a go?
Absolutely.
Is this a go?
Absolutely.
We'll do CPAC West. We'll do like the Super Bowl. It'll be CPAC West 2. And then
it'll just be CPAC West because it's going to go on after
just
that.
Just some Twitter out there talking about how there's not a big crowd here and stuff. There's over 400 paid people here today. That is a great first step for your first CPAC. And the people I've been able to talk to, many of them, they're pumped up. They're excited.
Yeah.
And look, we are having a sober conversation in the room about the issues that face us. So this is it's not just rah-rah. We're learning. And I'm just proud that we're really happy with the response here. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for being here.
Of course.
We are the home of Fox News on 92.3 and 99.1 FM Talk. So let's get it started. And we'll be right back on the Monica Jay Show with CPAC West live from the Grand Sierra Resort in Reno. KKFT, it's 92.3 FM and 99.1 FM Talk, serving all of Northern Nevada from Yerington to Austin. I'm trying to go through the alphabet here, but we are your live and local FM Talk station on the Monica Jay Show. And boy, it is so great here being live, doing the show from the Grand Sierra Resort to see all the wonderful people who have come to speak at CPAC West, the very first one here brought to you by the American Conservative Union, and we just had Matt Schlapp on, the president of that. And you never know who you're going to see at these events. And I dragged her out of the crowd, and please welcome to the show once again, Reagan Babe.
Hello.
Megan Barth.
Hello.
It's so nice having you up from Vegas.
Yeah, no, it's so nice to be here. You know, I go to CPAC every year on the East Coast, and I've been going now for, believe it or not, 10 years. I think I maybe have missed 1 year. But I wanted to see what the CPAC West was all about, and it looks like we have a pretty good crowd. Really good lineup. A lot of, important people in and around the mm-hmm. administration, like the Schlapps, as you mentioned, the acting Attorney General, Matt Whitaker, is going to speak next about China. There's an abortion panel coming up, gun panel coming up. So there's a lot of good topics, all the topics that, you know, we're hearing, especially after the Democrat debate last night, right?
I don't even understand how people can put up with that in the Democrat Party. You know, it's not just the Republicans. I cannot believe that just your average Democrat is falling behind this.
Yeah, you know, that the whole overarching theme of now the Democrat platform, which there's always been a hint of it, but now it's just full-blown, in-your-face socialism.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There always has been a socialistic streak. I think it was David Horowitz that said, inside every progressive is a totalitarian screaming to get out. And so they've done a really good job at masking themselves for exactly who they are. But Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama actually kind of peeled that onion back for us with many of the radical policies, as well as her policies were not only mirroring Obama's policies, which were widely rejected in 2010 and 2012, and 2016. But Hillary Clinton ignored the Rust Belt. So as long as the Democrats want to talk about racism and recession and, you know, the Russians,
all of those things that aren't there,
we're going to be talking about the Rust Belt.
Yeah.
You know, that's the R word that the Republicans should be leading with.
Well, and we know as Nevadans that Sisolak could care less about the rurals. From the recent taxes he's put on with the diesel gas tax, the water meters for private wells, he doesn't care about them at all, and we do. And that's why our rurals are red and the two major counties aren't.
And so, you know, we've seen this socialistic creep, and I'm not referring to Sisolak.
Oh,
That was a really good segue, wasn't it?
That was perfect.
I was meaning a socialistic creeper streak within our counties, our respective counties, especially the rurals here in Washoe, right? Washoe County. We see a lot of grassroots socialist activists that have taken a strong foothold here, that are really good at turning out the vote, getting into the college campuses, and using those activists in the legislature. I was witness to a communist that was lobbying on behalf of the Democrat Party within the legislature, and I had called her out on it publicly on Twitter. And the group that she
How could you do that?
I know. And the group that she was kind of lobbying on behalf, which I believe was Battleborn Progress. They said, how dare you call her a socialist? Mm-hmm. And before I could send them the screenshot of her Twitter profile, which said proud commie on it, she piped in and said, well, yes, I'm a proud communist. So these are the types of infiltrators we have going on within not only our legislature, but they're happily being invited into the Democrat Party as a voice and as a mechanism in order to turn out the votes. And so in the rurals, we can't really rest on our laurels.
No.
We have to get out the vote. We have to register voters. They are a small, vocal minority.
They're
small and mighty, and they're very vocal, and they're given a lot of attention. And like I said, they have the power behind them, like the unions, which can easily get out the vote, bus in people who quote unquote register voters.
I'm surprised actually that the unions haven't gone as far to say that, you know, we're going to have our own polling places, you know, because all of our culinary people are working, and so they have to be able just to come and vote, you know, where they're at. So,
right.
I'm surprised that hasn't happened yet. But I don't know if you're going to see this in Clark County, but Washoe County, the city of Reno, now has, I'm sure you have city advisory boards, you know, for whatever. We now have collectives beyond the neighborhood advisory boards. We have, and they are called collectives. What does that bring to mind for you?
The collectivist mentality, right?
Yeah.
And what are they supposed to do?
They're one more stop or one more barrier between the citizens and the city council for people to express their concerns to. So now you're not supposed to just go to your city council person. You're supposed to go to the meetings of the collective. You're supposed to go to the advisory board meetings.
And who is a part of this collective? Are they nominated? Are they appointed?
They're appointed on there.
Is it a paid position?
No. Just
vocal
in the community who want.
Oh, geez, you know, yes. Yeah. Okay. Wow.
So, it always reminds me when I hear the word
collective. Do you really have to follow that garbage? I'd be showing up to the city council meetings with a porch, a pitchfork. I think that the left tries to get away with how much they can get away with until people push back and won't tolerate it anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a form of political bullying, if you ask me, and it's also a form of just another layer not allowing the public the transparency which is demanded and required by citizens of their government. This is our government. Yeah. It's not their government. We were talking about, I was with a couple of gals last night over dinner, and we were talking about the Reno mayor and how she has deemed Reno as a welcoming city, which is just, of course, another term for sanctuary. Mm-hmm. And so this is why local elections are so important. People always pay attention to national politics, right? It's a little bit more juicy but to talk about. But really what's happening in your backyard is really where the change begins. And the Democrats know that. Yeah. And we have very low voter turnout in many of those local and municipal elections. And we have to change that.
Well, fortunately, I think change is coming, but if you'll notice the gentleman across the way in the gray shirt, that's Alex. Alex Watson, he's going to be joining me in a little bit, and he is with our brand new, reinstated College Republicans.
Oh, very good. You know, I heard it kind of got defunct up here, right?
It got defunct and pushed out. So now we have our College Republicans back. We have Turning Point USA here today.
Good.
They're bringing in Charlie Kirk. So
That's what I was really hoping is the revitalization, because we have to continue to pass the torch so that future generations understand that, as TPUSA says, socialism sucks.
You're making it sound like you're in your 90s. passing the torch.
You do. I mean, look, there is so much generational divide. I mean, I'm Generation X, and look at Generation Z. It's just two generations behind. And those are the David Hoggs of the world.
Yeah.
So there is much to do. And the Democrats are relying on Generation Z.
Yeah.
They want those
kids. We have to turn back the indoctrination of what the colleges have done, because it's already there. And the elementary school and the high school now, we have to go in and fix all that and deprogram.
That's right. And it just starts, you know, I think it was like Sam Adams that says, you know, kind of like takes a small minority to create a brush fire. And I'm paraphrasing, but just one person can start the brush fire.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like, for example, I was also speaking yesterday about the Tea Party. You know, the Tea Party is already 10 years old, and it was born out of Taxed Enough already. Mm-hmm. Everyone got involved for different reasons. Everyone got off their couch for different reasons to get involved.
And then the IRS and the government went after them.
Well, right. And so that's what shows you what happens when the Democrats have complete control, that they weaponize the agencies against the individual citizen and try to basically force them into silence or bankruptcy. Who can fight the federal government? The only person that I see that has the deep enough pockets and the fortitude is the president.
Yeah.
And not everyone has that luxury of a $2 billion bank account in order to fight the federal government.
Which is dwindling down because he's, you know,
he's doing it for free. And so when you look at the future generations, there is such a difference, you know, just on what they believe. And it has to come, and it comes directly through the school system from what they're hearing. I mean, now we're having students that can't wear a Trump hat or can't wear an American flag, for example.
They know what fellatio is.
Of course.
And they know that believe that there are 18 genders.
Is it only 18? I heard it was like 57.
Oh,
see, I'm a little bit confused.
I talked to my little sister from Big Brothers, and she said she was educated on 18. So.
18?
Yeah.
Okay. Joe Biden believes there's three. See, so
well, actually, I believe there's three.
Oh.
Because you have men, women, and you do have, very rarely, you have hermaphrodites who are born with both.
Correct. But is that really a gender?
Well, if you've got both.
Yeah. Then you're kind of a hybrid.
You're a hybrid, exactly. Supreme being, you got them both. All right, are you going to be at the Basque Parade tomorrow?
I am. I'm looking
forward.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be my, I think, fifth or fourth one.
Yes. So this is the fifth annual Basque Parade tomorrow. Yeah. So if you would like to meet Megan Barth, please. She's going to be hanging out at the 92.3, 99.1 FM talk booth, and we appreciate that so much.
Absolutely.
But you're going for the lamb fries, aren't you?
No.
You don't have your pin.
I don't want the lamb fries. I'm going to pass right over those.
All right. Well, there'll be other good things there. Yeah. So thank you so much for joining
me. Monica.
You are listening to a live edition of 92.3 and 99.1 FM Talk, The Monica J Show at CPAC West. And I see our, well, what should have been our governor, Adam Laxalt, standing right in front of me. So we're going to check in with him and talk about the Basque Fry and those lamb fries coming up next here on Live and Local FM Talk. It's 99.1 FM Talk. It's 99.1 FM Talk, your live and local FM talk station here in Northern Nevada. It's the Monica J Show, your show, things that you want to talk about. And it's a little bit different programming today because we are live at CPAC West, the very first one, the Conservative Political Action Committee brought to you by ACU. And, you know, we do have to take a stop and talk local. We'll have Adam Laxalt with us in the next hour, along with Matthew Whitaker, who was the former acting attorney general and worked with Jeff Sessions also for a while. But I want to tell you that we are getting back on track here in Northern Nevada. Joining me right now for a hot second here is, I'm very proud to meet him and so glad he's taken on this responsibility, is Alex Watson. Alex, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, of course. Glad to be here.
I get to tell people that we are finally back on track when it comes to the University of Nevada, Reno, and we have College Republicans back. And you are their social media director.
Yeah, so relations, social media, kind of just giving a presence into the social media market and stuff like that.
Well, come on. That's how Obama won. You know, he was always out there on his BlackBerry and he thought of... Don't get me started on that. But, you know, it is the younger generation that uses the social media. They don't back down on that, whether it be Twitter or, I mean, how many venues do you have? Are you on all of the platforms?
Yeah, so right now we have Instagram and Twitter, and then I think we're working on getting a Facebook page and a Facebook group started as well.
Good.
We had about like 150 students from UNR sign up at the club fair, so we're having our first meeting this coming Monday. So we're hoping to get a good turnout with that and hopefully get Republican and conservative students kind of involved in Northern Nevada and at UNR.
Okay. Well, we have conservatives listening. So let's talk about that. We lost the College Republicans. Was it difficult to get it started again?
I mean, on a social media standpoint, when we were trying to get all the social media, the Twitter, Facebook, and all that started up again, there's already pre-existing accounts for mm-hmm. the College Republicans, and we didn't have any access to those. So in that side, kind of rebranding ourselves and restarting that from scratch is a little bit difficult. But for the most part, the actual club itself, our president, Tanner, has been doing a really good job with marketing that along campus, tabling over in every place that we are able to. And we also have the event coming up on this coming Monday at the Student Union. And we've partnered with the school. They're going to do like a pizza thing for us there. So I think it'll be
College and pizza. It kind of goes hand in hand, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely.
So, well, let's talk about that. Have you gotten any pushback from the college Democrats?
Nothing so far. I'm good. Sure as we grow, mm-hmm. there might be some opposition. But I think for the most part, everyone's been pretty welcoming so far.
Maybe come on. You've got Charlie Kirk coming into town.
Yeah.
So you're...
Yeah, once Charlie Kirk comes into town, I think you're
going
to see some opposition sprouting up, definitely.
So when let's talk about Monday. So the first meeting, is it open for people to come in?
Yeah, so it's open to just about anyone. We have a couple of speakers that are coming that aren't in college, so it's open to basically anyone from Northern Nevada, Reno, Sparks area to come in here and learn about. We're basically just trying to get anyone and everyone involved in the College Republicans,
okay.
whether they want to help mentor the students or they want to get involved with some of the campaigns coming up or just in the Republican Party in general.
Okay. Well, what's the Instagram or Twitter site? And then we can get people hopefully messaging you and get them down there to the meeting. And what time is it?
Yeah, so On Twitter, it's just Nevada_CRS. And that's the same thing for Instagram as well, just Nevada_CRS. And then the first meeting this Monday is going to be at 6:30 in the Student Union. I believe it's room 423.
Okay. So for all the parents who are spending all that money to send their kids to UNR, yes, I said UNR, make sure that they know about the College Republicans. They're back in action, and they want those members signed up so they can start working and turning us conservative again. Good luck with that,
Thank
Alex.
You.
And we're all of the Republicans, they're behind you, and we'll support you in any way we can. So
that's good to hear.
All right. Alex Watson, thank you so much for joining me today. And we will be right back with more from CPAC West Live here on the station that brings you everything local. Yes, it is 92.3 and 99.1 FM Talk.